Damage from non-native insects, such as the emerald ash borer and the Asian longhorned beetle, are costing local governments about $2 billion a year and nearly $1 million in lost residential property values. That's according to a study published this week in the journal Public Library of Science 1, also known as PLOS 1. It's the latest dispatch on the front in the war against invasive species, the estimated 1,500 plants and animals across the U.S. that were brought here for cultivation or hitchhiked rides on the trains and boats and planes of international commerce and ended up in places where most scientists say they do not belong. Think zebra mussels. Think kudzu. Each year, billions of dollars are spent in the effort to control or eradicate these invaders. But our next guest says, wait a minute. Mark Davis is one of a number of researchers who say it's time to take a second look at non-native species. He joins us from his office at McAllister College in Minnesota, where he is the DeWitt Wallace Professor of Biology. Nice to have you, Professor. Thanks.
Very nice to join you, Jane.
So make your case. You say the movement to protect ecosystems from invasive species does more harm than good. How so?
It's been pretty clear that money has been thrown down the drain trying to manage non-native species. And, of course, this whole management effort is often framed as a war against non-native species. I think the best example in the U.S. is efforts to eradicate or drastically reduce the abundance of non-native plants in eastern forests. Two things happened at the same time. Many of the native plants began to decline in abundance, and non-native plants began to increase in abundance. And scientists, frankly, made a fundamental mistake. They assumed that the decline of the native species was due to the introduction of the non-natives. Studies done since then have shown that in many cases the non-native species have had little to do with the decline of the native species. The natives have declined due to other environmental factors, and non-native plants are simply better adapted to the new environment. So these efforts to eradicate things like buckthorn, garlic mustard, honeysuckle, it's impossible. Or at least if a community wants to do that, they need to know that they're going to be spending money forever, because these are residents now. I mean, you can call them aliens, exotics, you can call them terrible names. The fact is now they are residents in our forests.
Well, give us an example of where the arrival of a new plant or a new animal can actually benefit the ecosystem it finds its way into.
Well, the classic and overwhelming best example, which is why it's always used, of course, is the honeybee. Without that species, our food supply would be dramatically hindered. A lot of the non-native shrubs that states and counties are spending lots of money trying to eradicate, like honeysuckles and buckthorn, native birds love to feed on those species. Mm. I've tried to ask a robin whether they care if the berry they're eating is from a native or a non-native plant. I've yet been able to get an answer I can quite understand, but I think I trust the birds to eat what they like to eat.
But what do you say to people in places like the Great Lakes, you know, where the invasive zebra mussel is causing hundreds of millions of dollars in damage to the water supply infrastructure, or to communities in the Northeast where they're losing trees by the hundreds and thousands to the Asian longhorned beetle, or to southerners where kudzu is smothering forests? What do you say to people in those places?
You're not going to get any disagreement from me with respect to the zebra mussel. I grew up right on the shore of Lake Michigan, or of the forest pests that are killing trees. But it's interesting that it's just the non-native forest-killing insects that make the news. Your listeners, probably very few of them, would know that the insect that's killing the most trees in North America right now is the mountain pine beetle. That's a native species. Mm. But there seems to be this preoccupation with, and this love, actually, this love and passion to hate non-native species.
So when did this backlash against invasive species take hold? Because at one point back in the 1800s, the mid-1800s, I think, people were literally importing species from overseas. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah, the relationship between Americans and non-native species is very interesting. You're absolutely right. There have been periods when people have actively tried to bring species in, partly because it reminded them of their home, and partly because the country wanted to prove that we were not a frontier outback, but we were a cosmopolitan country like European countries. And So we'd bring in operas and we'd bring in species as well. But in the early 1980s, a number of ecologists began to be concerned over the really dramatic increase in the spread of species around the world, and decided to frame this phenomenon as biological invasions. Once they framed it as biological invasions, an agenda was clearly set.
And yet it's such an emotional issue for many people. I mean, and you know, you're in the minority when it comes to invasive species in the environmental movement. Your essay in the magazine Nature drew a lot of criticism. Daniel Simberloff, editor of the research journal Biological Invasion, says you're downplaying the danger of invasive species and distorting the work that conservation groups are trying to do and putting at risk a lot of money, a lot of hard-to-come-by government funding. They need to do their work. What do you say to that?
Dan and I are good friends. I think we agree on practically everything except this one. What we are arguing is that Dan and others have really oversold the dangers of non-native species in general. A lot of money has been wasted on trying to control species that aren't harmful, that it's not even feasible to try to reduce their numbers because they're now residents. I'm thinking of times I've gone into national parks in the last couple of years. You see crews of people walking down the paths spraying herbicides, trying to get rid of certain species. You know, these are residents now.
Well, you have Dan Simberloff on one hand, and then you have, on the other hand, people like Hugh Raffles, who's an anthropologist at the New School, writing an op-ed in the New York Times comparing the attempt to control non-native species to the anti-immigration movement. People like Michael Pollan, author of The Omnivore's Dilemma, he's called the war against invasive species xenophobic. Why has this debate become so emotional?
You know, people love to hate an enemy. I mean, it's a hard thing to prove, but evolutionary biologists have been making the case that as humans evolved, we evolved a very strong preference and affiliation for those like us, simultaneously with that, a very strong mistrust of those that are not like us.
So where's the middle ground here? You say we need to embrace what you call novel ecosystems. What does that look like, and where do we go from here?
Right. The middle ground is really common sense. Non-native species are just species. Like native species, some of them do things that we like, some may be actually very dangerous, and most are relatively benign. We need to focus on what the effects of species are and much less on how long they have been here. It would not mean accepting longhorn beetles and just letting them come in. It would not mean accepting zebra mussels and not trying to prevent their spread, but it would reduce the ideology and would result in managing our attitudes in a much more effective way than trying to garden nature in our own image.
Mark Davis is the DeWitt Wallace Professor of Biology at McAllister College in Minnesota. For more on invasive species, go to hereandnow.org. Mark, thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure, Jane. Enjoy talking with you.
One, a two, a one, two, ready, go! I say, hey there, little insect, don't scare me so. Don't land on me, baby, it bite me low. I say, hey there, little insect, please calm down. Then we'll have fun and fool around.